Hello, it is August 18th, 2014. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 444 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports and earth. I'm Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. There is roughly 5 to 6% less of me since I talked to you last. On Thursday, I was out in Los Angeles for Fox Sports last week. If you watch Fox Sports Live, you saw me matching wits with Donovan McNabb as the fates foretold. And then on Thursday night, I ordered a mahi taco, and I've been way late ever since then. The mahi in the mahi taco was not the freshest mahi, apparently. And that, along with whatever else was in my stomach for the last 72 hours now, is in various sad places that you don't want to be visiting all across this great nation of ours, including airplanes on the red-eye flight from Los Angeles to Atlanta. I've had nothing but a couple crackers, a fig Newton, a couple slivers of macaroni and cheese in about 4 days. So I've lost a lot of weight, and I also may be hallucinating this podcast. So anyway, forgive me in advance if what I'm saying makes no sense. I have not eaten, and I'm still very ill. But hey, if I can survive national television, and I did somehow, I can do a podcast. So it is time for our yearly, now that my gastrointestinal update is completed, we will talk to Andy Behrens. Andy Behrens is our yearly tradition on this podcast. That's the second year, but you know, we've done it both years. With Andy Behrens, he's a fantasy football expert for Yahoo. We're going to go team by team like we always do and talk about who we need to know, what he needs to tell us on each team. And the last thing I want to mention before we get going, thank you for thanks to Chuck Culpepper for all the kind words on the Chuck Culpepper podcast. That guy was super awesome. He's always been super awesome, but a lot of people did not know just how super awesome he was got to find out at that last podcast. That was awesome. He is great. And also, he set the trivia bar at a level I'm not sure it will ever be reached. Anyway, let's talk some fantasy football with Andy Behrens. All right, Andy, first off, thank you for continuing this tradition like no other. That is you doing a yearly fantasy football podcast with me. I took this, of course, from Drew McGarry when he used to do this from Deadspin. He doesn't do the podcast anymore, so now you're mine.
I am all yours, at least for the next hour. So I really appreciate the invite. Love doing this.
Oh, please, you're the man on this stuff. And I ordinarily I'm typically not actually very good at fantasy football. This has been the case for a long time.
Really a good way to launch the fantasy.
Well, that's why I'm talking to you. My favorite thing is I have a league that I've been for 20 years that you keep 12 guys a year.
Oh, wow.
I love it. It's actually more permanent than the NFL itself.
Do you have a separate rookie draft, or do you just throw the rookies into
The draft every year essentially becomes rookies. Because if you're keeping 12 guys, you basically just are drafting rookies every year. Like, I had Randy Moss his entire career. And I still never won a title, by the way, if that tells you how good I am.
There's no nobody's salary goes up, anything like that. There's no restrictions to keeping players.
You just keep your 12 guys. I love it. It was my first ever fantasy league. I'm still in it. The draft is next week, and I can't wait. But it's very difficult to find draft information, like advice for those, because no one in the world does leagues like that.
Exactly.
So, and then my last question before, because what we're going to do, I figure, is we're going to go over team by team, but to make sure this doesn't go 2 hours, we have 90 seconds per team. Now, I suspect on certain teams, we will not need the full 90 seconds.
There are perhaps some opportunities out there to save time.
Okay, but in case, and forgive me in advance, because if you get to 90 seconds, I feel like the jerk being the host of the podcast, being like, hey, stop it.
You could just, you could do something a little, so you could play a little music, just start, do the Oscar send-off, that sort of thing.
Well, I may also be asking questions in those 90 seconds, which could take up more time. So I'll be a good judge about it. I'll be fair. And then I have one last question. This makes me the oldest.
Well, the Jaguars yield their entire 90 seconds.
they yield to the gentleman from Minnesota. but when it comes to one last thing, you've been writing about fantasy sports for a long time. My bugaboo, and this is my old man thing, I don't like PPR.
I'm your guy. I'm your guy then. So, I'm the one-man army against PPR. Yeah, I can't. I can't stand the idea. I mean, to a certain extent, I like when scoring settings at least reflect things that kind of sort of win in real life, right? And I can't stand the idea that like a catch for no gain has the equivalent value to a 10-yard run. There's a lot I don't like about PPR.
Yeah, the example I always use on this is for years and years in high school and then after high school. So a group of friends of mine would always go to play on our high school football field, tackle football, which means we only made it to like 23, and then that was not happening anymore. But we played tackle football on our high school field the day after Christmas, and because you can't, you don't really, you don't, they're not really doing downs. I mean, we're not really doing yardage, so on. We play the full field, but it's not like we were like had down markers. We were just like eight idiots. So of course you would do three completions for a first down. So,
Sure,
of course, if
sure.
you threw an incompletion on the first play, you'd immediately just throw it, catch it, and fall down. That's what PPR is. That's what PPR
Good. That's
is.
really good. Oh God, that's a. I thought I'd found all the anti-PPR talking points, but that's a good one.
Yeah, it's
I'm
just
gonna leave
like,
that in.
well, yeah, well, I mean, if they, I mean, so for all those people that used to watch our games and get frustrated by that, that I'm sure cross over the readership into the thousands. I'm sure they'll be able to get that analogy. All right, so here we go. What we're gonna do is we're gonna go division by division and team by team from the bottom up. And 90 seconds on the clock, though I bet we won't need it with the division that we're starting with first, which is the AFC South. So we're going to start with the Houston Texans. Can we count on Arian Foster? What are we going to get out of him?
Sure. I think you can. I think it's reasonable to count on Arian Foster. He was supposed to be dead last year, right? And it was 4.5 yards per carry before the injury. Surprisingly good. He's gonna essentially have the same role that he's had in years past. Heavy dose of receptions out of the backfield. He's a total yardage monster. I mean, he's a legitimately good back. There are questions about whether anybody can stay healthy over a full season. And if a guy projects for 300 touches, then there's a little bit of injury risk associated with him. But I don't think it's extreme with Foster. I think he's a really good bet. In fact, this is the kind of team that we generally like for fantasy purposes in that the stars are very well known, right? Like Andre Johnson is coming off 109 catch season, is great, has been a top 12 fantasy receiver for, I think it's 5 of the last 6 years. DeAndre Hopkins, kind of an up and comer. Ryan Fitzpatrick's obviously sketchy, but he's got that job firmly. There's nobody breathing down his neck there, so
But
it's a
does that hurt Johnson and Hopkins and those guys? That he has the job? That's great for him.
it's yeah. I mean, he's not obviously Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't have he's not cannon armed, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick or anything. I mean, he can't reach every area of the field, but a little reckless, right? I mean, you're not necessarily going to own Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's not a great ownership experience in like a 12-team league, but it's not terrible. It's not a deadly quarterback situation, and it's not an offense that's only going to throw the ball 400 times or something like that. So I wouldn't panic about Andre. And the quarterback situation can't get any worse than it was last year is the thing, right? Like Schaub was terrible, the replacements were largely terrible, and Andre Johnson was still 1,400 yards. So it's not going to get any worse than that. So not too bad there. The worry there is that the defense could be great.
Which
Like
ruins
if
it.
the defense is great, and the great thing about the Houston Texans for so many years was the shootout potential, and that might be gone.
All right, so now we go to, we went a little over 90 seconds, but that's okay because it was worth it. Okay, I'll say that on every one though. So it's not like we'll get to 90 seconds, and at the end you just went like parakeet and just started throwing out random words. Then it wouldn't be worth it. But if you give us the
That'll just
information,
be
it's worth
there's there should be like penalty time with each
it. Yeah,
with each game.
exactly. All right, next up is the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think most of America have Toby Gerhardt fever. Do you?
Toby Gerhardt fever. This is the guy where I think the ceiling and the floor are relatively close. I think it's pretty clear he's going to get a ton. He's going to get all the work he can handle, right? He's a competent receiver. They're just going to they're going to give him the ball all day out of the backfield. The issue is, will they be able to score? You'll spend your whole year hoping that Toby, like if you own him, that Toby gets the Jaguars one offensive touchdown, right? Because it's not going to be like they're not going to be in 28-33 games. It's not going to be like that. I mean, they're going to be scoring like 13 points a game in all likelihood. Bortles has actually looked really good this preseason, but I don't know at what point they go to him. I don't know if they actually entertain the idea now of starting him early in the season. He's looked really good, and some of the receivers are okay too. The rookie Lee could be really good. But I mean, realistically, this is a team that is going to score like two touchdowns and probably average between 13 and 16 points a week, and it's not going to be an explosion. So I feel like the floor for Toby Gerhardt is probably 1,200 total yards and like five touchdowns, and the ceiling is like 1,500 total yards and eight touchdowns, you know? So I think comfortably, if he's healthy, that's about where he finishes.
And is the Cecil Shorts era over? Is he going to be the sleeper fun guy, or could he still sneak up?
It's not over. But it's kind of crowded now, and there's a bunch of young talent there. And again, if you don't think that the team is going to score 24 points a game, then you can't think of any of these guys as more than a kind of lottery ticket wide receiver three types.
All right, so Jacksonville, you're saying, will be as thrilling to watch as they
surely I save some time there, right?
Yeah, no, we actually went to 124, but so you saved 6 seconds, which I have ruined by still continuing to talk right now. Okay, next up, Tennessee Titans. I don't know anything to say about Tennessee. Tell me what I need to know about Tennessee.
Well, you probably need to know that Bishop Sankey is, and there is some difference of opinion.
Is he the one
Bishop.
Running back rookie worth looking at?
I don't know that there's only one worth looking at, but I think he's probably at the top of the list only because his path to touches is so clean, right? It's really just Sean Green that's blocking him as a possible every down back, and we've all sort of seen that show before, and it's not great. You know, it's 3.8 yards per carry or something like that. So Sankey's a guy where, like, a lot of the draft analysts didn't totally love his tape. I was very impressed by watching a little bit of film of him, not necessarily even from last year, but the year before. His offensive line in college was terrible. It was atrocious, and he still had a big year, and he's like, he's ducking tacklers the second he gets the ball in his hands, and I thought he had a really productive year. So I'm pretty impressed by him. I think he can do a lot. I think he's put the ball on the ground a couple times in camp, and that's a little worry. But I think he's pretty clearly the most talented back there, and he's in line for a pretty significant workload. And you get him as like the 18 through 24, somewhere in that range in terms of the running back. So I think Sankey's a pretty interesting player. People know about, not our favorite format, but, Kendall Wright's a great player in PPR. Even though the quarterback situation here is super sketchy and Locker should be probably outside everyone's top 20, he's not a particularly interesting player. And they have one other guy that you should think about targeting very late in drafts, Justin Hunter. I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. Can he catch 60 balls this year? I hope so. He is a guy who totally passes the eye test. He's like 6'4". He's a great, jump ball candidate. Just a good vertical play, a guy who should be a red zone threat for them. All those touchdowns that Kendall Wright doesn't catch, you would like to think at some point go to Justin Hunter.
I kind of miss the days whenever the top running backs taken in the actual draft were always first round guys. I kind of miss that.
I know.
It was so much simpler that day, in those days, and now
nobody gets paid now either. I mean, yeah. Like the marquee running backs in free agency will get like 3 years and $10 or $12 million. I mean, nobody gets paid. Right. Matt Forte might be the last guy who really got paid.
Yeah. All right, Indianapolis, Andrew Luck. Are they just going to let him throw like crazy constantly? And more to the point, is Trip Richardson? Are we going to find out this year whether he's actually good or is he actually just not good?
No, I think we've pretty much confirmed that he's not good, right? I mean, the issue for Trent Richardson is whether he can make, the best comp that I have been able to come up with, both like stylistically for Trent Richardson and for where his career could possibly go from here, is Thomas Jones, right? So Thomas Jones came out and was terrible for Arizona, like exactly the way Trent Richardson is numbers-wise. I mean, it was 3.5 yards per carry, showed you nothing. And, over time and with experience and in good systems and in systems that trusted him to shoulder a big load, was eventually a pretty darn competent running back and a nice fantasy contributor, never really splashy, never all that exciting. But a really productive fantasy player. But again, I think, I don't know that there's so many cases out there like Thomas Jones, right? That's like the one I can come up with where a guy was bad for multiple seasons and then it kind of clicked. And I think Richardson runs a little bit that way. I mean, there's just no big plays from Richardson, right? Like, he'll have a lot of runs where you're like, wow, he did pretty well to get 2 yards there.
Right.
But there's never a run where he gets those 2 yards and then he makes the secondary move and then he just blows you away. So I don't have very high hopes there. The best case for him would look a little bit like his rookie season, where a big touchdown total sort of masks an otherwise crappy season. I mean, you kind of hope for that because Indianapolis is obviously going to score. Andrew Luck is obviously a great passer who's only going to get better. Deep receiving core. I mean, we all love Hilton, but it's crowded now, right? You got Wayne coming back. You have Hakeem Nicks, who, you know, hard to touch Hakeem Nicks after last year, but we know there is talent there.
All right, so now we're going to move over to the division where...
I must have gone way over on the Colts,
no,
right?
No, you only went like 8 seconds over. You did great on that one. So we're doing great. Oh, we're really doing great on time, except for when I keep telling us that we're doing great on time. And that totally ruins this pack. But okay, so now we're going to go to the NFC West, a division that would seem one of the problems, I think, with generally any team in this division is they have to face the other team's the other division's defense at six
times
a year. But starting out, I feel like I'll start with the Rams. One interesting thing about the Rams, I feel like we've all been guessing for like 4 or 5 years who's going to be the running back, who's going to be the running back, but now we finally know.
Yeah, absolutely. Stacy was so good last year, and some of his highlights were like among the best. You know, it's funny, there was two guys, both in this division, both rookies last year. Between Stacy and Andre Ellington, I felt like those two guys had like all of my favorite runs. I mean, and totally different, again, stylistically. Like, Stacy had a couple of carries that were just like, he's blowing people up. He's juking other people. I mean, that is a legitimately talented guy who, you know, good after contact, who I think is probably in line for a 290 to 320 touch sort of season, right? I think he's in great shape. That defense is really good. So it should be a team where the run is never really out of play. You know, there shouldn't be too many games where Stacy finishes with, like, 10 carries, you know, because, it just looks like a good team in almost all phases. Bradford is back, and you know, Bradford is kind of a punchline player for a lot of guys, but that guy was having a really good season before the knee injury last year. So that's I wouldn't totally sleep on him. If I'm in a 16-team league, something like that, I think Sam Bradford can still enter the equation. I don't think there's one receiver there who's so special that, I mean, like, if you're starting a Rams receiver in week one when there's no bye weeks and no big injuries or anything like that, then your draft might have gone badly, or or you're in just like a crazy deep league, because there's no individual receiver there. Not Austin, not Brett, not I don't see a receiver there I'm just dying to get. But
I do keep thinking
it's a deep group.
I do keep thinking that this year, I said this last year, this year is going to be the Bradford year. I still feel like that first year he was so good and everyone was so excited. I keep waiting for it to happen and it keeps not happening.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, it was a pretty good year underway last year. I don't think the yardage was exceptional, but wasn't he throwing like 2-3 touchdowns a game, like every game until he got hurt? I mean, it wasn't a terrible season, is what I'm saying. And it might have ended well, fantasy wise. It just, you know, it ended prematurely. But I don't think that guy is such a mess that we should count him out.
All right, now we go to my buzzsaw, that is the Arizona Cardinals. You've already touched on this guy, but Football Outsiders has given me a full-on Andre Ellington boner. They are I think he's their player to watch this, like their number one breakout guy this year, they actually said, is Ellington. And it appears to be his job across the board. They're not really even like in the past have been like, there'll be some Ryan Williams and some Benny Wells, but like this year it's clearly Andre Ellington. They seem to have given the job to him.
Yeah, just a massive talent gap between him and anybody else on that depth chart. I want to say last year it was over 1,000 scrimmage yards and less than like 160 touches, something like that. I mean, just a crazy efficiency from him. I think it was 5.5 yards a carry, maybe 9.5 per reception. One of my favorite stats on him last year is, you know, I mean, when running backs receive the football, they're generally receiving it around the line of scrimmage, right? They have a lot of work to do after the catch to get any yardage. And I want to say that he had 21 first downs on like his 39 catches, something like that. It's a crazy ratio for a running back. You just don't see it. Like that's probably the same number of first downs that like Forte had, maybe that Shady McCoy had. I mean, it's like, he's doing a lot of work after the catch, and he's so explosive. His run last year, where he juked Darrell Revis to the ground, was just about my favorite play of the season. Just a really, really fun player. Is he going to get 300 touches? I don't know that it'll be that much. You know, could he get hurt? Of course, he could get hurt. They could all get hurt. But if he just gets like 50 more touches, which is a totally reasonable guess. That's going to be a huge, huge season from him. That's going to be, you know, just 50 more touches would probably end up with like 1,400 scrimmage yards, and he's the kind of guy who's so explosive where, like, every carry is a goal line carry, right? I don't care if he's not getting the ball at the one or the three or whatever. I mean, he's a very, very fun watch. The receiving core there, really interesting as well, obviously. Maybe this is the year that Floyd surpasses Larry Fitzgerald in fantasy value. I think we see Fitz in the slot a lot, so he's going to have some, he'll probably have a really, really, I mean, he'll have a really nice season in any format, but he'll have an especially nice season maybe in PPR. But I would not be surprised if Floyd ends up with more receiving yards, more touchdowns. I wish Carson Palmer was a better deep passer, like just for the sake of the offense and everything that Arians wants to do. I just wish he was a better fit for that scheme, but, they should pile up points. They have a lot of talent.
All right, so then we go to a team that I still think may actually be the best in the division, but may actually feels like it'll score the least points, and that's San Francisco. Do you agree? Or that's even if Kaepernick doesn't get, if Kaepernick gets hurt, oh, for crying out loud! Like, they may get shut out every game.
Yeah, well, you got to remember they only threw the ball last.
It's Gabbert. He'll fumble.
Right, like, right. Well, it's still tough for me that they would put them. Tough for me to believe that they would put themselves in a situation where Gabbert is really behind him. I mean, Gabbert's terrible, legitimately terrible, and they can't run anything that they want to do. You know, they can't run any of the fun Kaepernick plays with Gabbert. He's just a deer in the headlights quarterback. He's awful. But that legitimately very hard to believe that that would actually come to pass. Nice group of receivers, but they rarely throw the ball. Dead last in pass attempts last season. Will that trend upward? This defense might not be so rock solid early in the season, depending on where the Smith situation goes and that looming suspension, and you've got Bowman probably out for half the year with the very late, the playoff knee injury. So they're not going to have like the full band together until later in the season. So perhaps they're not going to hold everybody to 10, 12 points, for the first 6, 8 weeks, something like that. So, maybe they'll get to throw the ball a little bit more. But it is almost impossible for Kaepernick to have a top 8, like a really sensational fantasy season, if he's only throwing the ball 410 times, right? That is really hard to do, because there's dudes out there who are going to throw it 650 times, right? So you're pretty much limited to liking the one receiver, Michael Crabtree, and obviously you like Vernon Davis. I don't think that Vernon had a crazy ratio of touchdowns to targets last season. I think it was 13 touchdowns on 80 some targets. Like he was like 14th or 15th in terms of at the position in terms of total targets. So that's not likely to happen again, right? You would expect a guy seeing 84 targets, even a red zone threat, to maybe get 7, 8 touchdowns in a good season. So I think Vernon gives away some of last year's numbers. But now the running back depth chart is basically down to Frank Gore and Carlos Hyde. And Carlos Hyde is pretty great. And probably, so for your league, for your keep them their whole career dynasty league, Carlos Hyde is a really interesting player, because it's not difficult to imagine the scenario where we all think of Carlos Hyde as like a late first round, early second round pick next year, because Frank Gore might not be in San Francisco, right? And Hyde is very, very good and could be a great system fit there for a long time.
Of course, he's a running back, so for a long time is like 2.5 years.
right. Well, that's kind of the other trick to dynasty leagues, stuff like that. I always feel like you have such a huge edge in dynasty leagues if you just forget that you're keeping them and you just play for the current season, because everything reshuffles in the NFL. It is not like baseball at all. You can't make plans 4 years out, 5 years out.
All right, so now we go to Seattle. I know Russell Wilson, I think some people have him as a top 10 quarterback this year. I don't know, man. I certainly would like him to run my team. I just never quite trust him fantasy-wise. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's the Kaepernick problem. Wilson is a more efficient player. I like the player a little bit better. I like them both, but I like Wilson a little bit better. Not turnover prone. It completes a high percentage. Just lots of yards per attempt. He's everything we like in a quarterback in real life. Except he, like Kaepernick, only throws the ball 400 times a year. Again, it's really hard, almost impossible in this era to have like a top five, top three. Like, a quarterback who only throws 400 times cannot carry you. I mean, he can have the odd game. Who was the opponent 2 years ago? I think it was Buffalo, where like he ran for a couple of scores and he threw for a couple more and he was on his way to an all-time fantasy day, and then they kind of hit the brakes a little bit because they were crushing him. He can have the odd day like that if he gets a couple of rushing scores, but you know, I mean, it's really hard when you throw the ball 420 times a year to ever, you know, to ever crack that top three, to ever be a dominant player at your position. So it's basically still the running game here. And that job is still, for all the talk about Marshawn Lynch and for all the, oh, Michael's going to poach carries and Turbin might poach carries. I mean, that is still largely going to be Marshawn Lynch's gig. And he is really good and showed no signs of, you know, anybody speculating on a Marshawn Lynch decline is just, that's just a total wild spec play. That's not based on anything that has happened on the field yet, because he was really good deep into the season last year. He was very good in the postseason. There are no signs telling you that Marshawn Lynch is going to get worse, and it's now, this is 3 years with like 1,200 yards and, you know, 11, 12 touchdowns. So that's not a player I would bet against.
Yeah, he's pretty badass. He is definitely the guy that, like, anytime I have those doubts of, like, man, I don't know, football kind of wears me down with this capitalism and its overarching the megalomaniacal nature of the league and just how kind of awful they are about so many things. Then Marshawn Lynch will, like, just run over people running. I'm like, oh, this game is so cool. I love this game.
I know, exactly.
I feel like Marshawn Lynch is exactly the guy that represents that. All right, now we'll go over to the AFC North, starting with the Cleveland Browns. Now, first off, you know, the Hoyer Manziel question is, of course, what everyone's talking about. But either way, is there any reason to have anybody on your team from this team?
This is such a complicated team fantasy wise, because as we speak right now, we don't know the resolution to the Josh Gordon situation, right? I mean, Josh Gordon led the NFL in receiving yards last year in 14 games.
I'm under the presumption that it's at least like what, a quarter of the year?
Well, that's the thing. If, let's say it's half the year, he's going to be available in the most, I mean, fantasy football is not a rotisserie sport, right? So it's like the September numbers don't mean nearly as much as the December numbers. I mean, when we need Josh Gordon to be Josh Gordon is, you know, like weeks 13 through 16, and he could very well be around for that. And that would be awesome. And if that's the case, then you have to think about Josh Gordon. Like, if we find out later on that Josh Gordon is going to play the back half of the season, you got to think about drafting him in like round four, round five. That's probably the right range for a guy who could be a true, absolute difference maker late in the season. And then with this team, we also have the quarterback situation, which, as we speak, is unresolved. Eventually, you figure it's Manziel's job. Whether it's opening week or whether it's week three or whether it's week six, I mean, eventually Johnny Manziel is going to have that job, and then we have the problem of figuring out what that all looks like. I mean, we still think it's going to be a run first, run second kind of offense. Cleveland was either at or very, very near the top of the league in pass attempts last season. It's not going to look like that at all. They've got Ben Tate and Terrence West. They've got two guys who are like, they're in a dogfight of a position battle too. I mean, it's awesome. The whole team is full of really fun position battles and all sorts of storylines. I love Terrence West as a runner. I would like to see what a full season of Ben Tate would look like, but I think that thing ends up as a bit of a job share. You know, I'm all over the board here, I realize, but it's just a really fun team. Jordan Cameron, you know, a massively talented tight end who I have number two at the position, and some of that rank is based on the idea that we won't have Josh Gordon around to hog targets and hog the yards a lot of the year, but Cameron is a massively talented player who deserves to go early. So there are a bunch of weapons here, and it's not a terrible offensive line. And there's an opportunity for someone, whether it's Hoyer, whether it's, I mean, eventually, as we say, it's got to get to Manziel at some point. I mean, it would be crazy to draft that guy in the first round and generate as much buzz as he has and just never play him. I mean, that's ridiculous. So, you know, maybe we see 12 games, maybe we see 14 games. I don't know. It is really hard to be a rookie quarterback in the NFL is the other thing. As fun as the whole story is going to be, the rookie record for touchdown passes is like 26. I mean, so that's your outer limit for what you would expect a rookie to do. I wouldn't expect Johnny Manziel to have the greatest rookie quarterbacking season in the history of the league. I don't think he's that caliber of player. I liked Bridgewater more coming into the draft. I haven't seen a whole lot in the preseason that makes me rethink Johnny Manziel totally. There are going to be some rushing yards there, but they're not going to use him like Cam Newton is Carolina's goal line
right,
back,
right.
and that's his value as a rusher. And I don't think you're going to use Manziel that same way. So the rushing component, while nice, is not going to make up for the fact that he'll probably only throw 20, 22 touchdowns, and that's in a pretty good season, like by rookie standards.
If everything goes right.
So I would just, I hate to sound like the hedging fantasy guy, but I would just dial down. I would temper the expectations for Johnny Manziel. He's a fun character, obviously, but he's not much of a threat to be a top 10, top 12 fantasy quarterback, is what I'm saying.
I would rather watch the Browns go 2-14 under Johnny Manziel than 10-6 under Brian Hoyer. And I bet.
Oh, no question.
I bet deep down you might even find a couple Browns fans that feel that. It's kind of a
bummer too, because Hoyer was a really nice story for like two games last year, right? Yeah. That thing was going really well, and it was the Buffalo game where he got blown up. Just a shame that his season ended that way, and a shame that now he's just like a sidebar to the Johnny Manziel story.
Okay, now we go to Baltimore. Ray Rice, obviously the off-season issue with Baltimore, only missing two games, but he kind of sucked last year anyway, didn't he?
Yeah, so a couple things. Number one, I mean, like, what a dick. And if you just want to not draft Ray Rice because you don't want to think about Ray Rice, I mean, I get it. I'm on board with that. I fully support that. And he was a dog last year before he was hurt, is the thing. So he had the hip injury early in the season, but his first two games when he was healthy were only, like, 3 yards a carry as well. So, you know, this is a guy where, like, well, we think the offensive line could be better. We think Ray is in better shape. And it's, you know, the more, like, contingencies we have to have where, like, you know, this is different and this is different and this is different, so maybe he won't be as terrible as he was. You know, now we're really in dangerous territory. And he's missing a couple games to start the season. So, you know, right off the bat, you get no help from this guy. Not somebody who's going to end up on very many of my rosters. I mean, because he was legitimately bad last year before the injury, after the injury, in basically every game except the Bear game. You know, he got one game against a historically bad run defense and he was fine. And everything else was terrible. So not a guy I could trust. Bernard Pierce wasn't that great last year either, also dealing with an injury, but is probably the best bet in that backfield right now. It's not... you know, to my eye, it does not look like an offense, nor has it ever really been an offense that just piles up points and yards. I do love Torrey Smith. I think Torrey Smith is a guy that people sleep on, where maybe you write him off a little bit as you think of him only as a vertical threat, something like that. But, he is coming pretty close to running, you know, every route in the playbook right now. And I'm pretty excited. I seem to end up with him a lot. I guess he must be a player where I value him at like 20 and the rest of the room values him at 28 or something, because I end up with Torrey Smith all the time. I think that guy's a talent and he's a burner. I think he could be good. Joe Flacco is not going to give you a big yardage total and he's not going to give you a big touchdown total. That is not his history at all. And, I don't see a huge ceiling to anybody else associated with this offense, really.
Yeah, this actually looks like the most boring offense in the league.
If your draft ends and you don't have a Raven, like, let's say you play 8 leagues and you don't draft a Raven anywhere, that's probably fine.
Yeah,
you're not going to regret not having any shares of this offense.
All right, now we go to Pittsburgh. It seems like they got a lot of help for Roethlisberger. Is that going to be enough, or is the offensive line still too leaky?
Well, the offensive line got healthier, right? Pouncy back. I mean, that could be enough. The thing I wrote about the Steelers a few days ago, and the thing that always amazes me with Roethlisberger is, like, nobody has ever been sacked at this rate in the history of the league. And, you know, like, Brett Favre has the all-time sack record, right? And he played a zillion years. Roethlisberger's on pace to break that in, like, 2017. I mean, like, it's just a couple years away from being the most sacked quarterback of all time, if he can actually remain healthy. I mean, it's like, we don't really have a precedent for a guy absorbing this much abuse over the course of a career. So I don't know how long it lasts, but he's in a pretty good situation right now. Offensive line it certainly appears as though it's going to be better. Antonio Brown is great. He's not a big receiver. He's not like a red zone guy, but he is a guy who will catch 110 balls for you and pile up yards. I mean, like, he was second or third in every stat that matters last year, right? So he didn't lead the league in anything, so we didn't buzz about him totally as much as we should, but, you know, he's right there at the top of the list in every stat that mattered. So Brown is going to be really good. rest the receiving core, a bunch of question marks. We'll see if Marcus Wheaton can do it for a full season or even a couple of games. You know, he was everybody's favorite sleeper last year and kind of crapped out on us. But there's a lot of targets that have come open with the departure of Sanders and the departure of Cotchery. I suppose we should talk about the backfield here too, because Le'Veon Bell is kind of in that Trent Richardson club where he was really not that good last year, except for he scored a bunch of touchdowns, like 8 or 9 touchdowns. But he gained 3.5 yards a carry. He's got a guy behind him in LeGarrette Blount who has been much better at a couple of stops than Le'Veon Bell has been. So that could be, if not an even split in carries to start the season, we could see Blount get a lot of the goal line work, Bell between the 20s. And then you've got another guy there, Andre Archer, who is the fastest kid in the draft and has made a couple of, like, wow plays in the preseason. Again, it's preseason, who cares, but he's a fast dude, and he's probably going to get 50 catches this season. So in a PPR league, I would keep the name Dre Archer in mind. And he's a fun weapon for Roethlisberger, too. So for me, like, Bell is a guy I stay away from because he carries a crazy price tag. It's like a late first, early second round price tag in a lot of leagues. And that's just not something I would do for a player who was recently not good. Roethlisberger to me is a guy that you want, you know, the quarterback is so deep. You can get, like, Roethlisberger and Rivers and platoon them all year and not spend anything at the position, right? You can draft those guys in the middle of a draft, late in the draft. So he's a smart play for people who generally don't spend big at quarterback.
All right, and we wrap up with Cincinnati. The Bengals, I wrote a piece about this, about how everyone was like, wow, how could the Bengals spend all that money on a quarterback, when actually when you look at the contract, it's not really that much. It's only going to cost them like 2 years. But nevertheless, should we trust Dalton?
Yeah, but if you're a reporter, you can get 2 stories out of that,
that's
right?
True.
You can get the total indignation about the value of the contract.
And then the explanation.
So you got to react quickly.
React quickly and then correctly later.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I don't know. Should we like him as a fantasy guy?
So he was great last year fantasy wise. We all know he's not the strongest arm, not the most accurate club in the bag, right? There's a bunch of issues with Andy Dalton, and then you get meltdown potential. He throws 2 or 3 balls up for grabs every game. So there's a lot of like real life worries there. But the volume was there last season. I don't know that the volume will be there with Gruden out of town to the same extent. I rather doubt that it will, so that's a worry. The defense is really good, so there's no reason why you would expect this team necessarily to throw the ball 600 times a year. So I do think Dalton is someone who, to deliver that big fantasy season, is going to need decent pass volume. Helps that he has A.J. Green. I mean, A.J. Green on his own probably gets you 13 touchdowns a year. Bummer that Marvin Jones is hurt and out for a while, but there are some names there who can step in and be decent replacements for him. Mohamed Sanu, get the second-year tight end, Tyler Eifert, a pretty good receiver. So there's some options there. Really explosive running back, Gio Bernard. The thing with Gio, it seems like he and this rookie, Jeremy Hill, would be like, I mean, they seem like perfectly complementary players. Hill looks like a guy who should be a goal line back. Gio Bernard looks like a guy who should be the between the 20s players. But I don't think it's going to be that simple. Because teams, you know, smartish teams don't want to be so predictable that you know if this guy's on the field that this is what they're going to do. You know, so I don't think it'll be exactly that way. And Gio Bernard got a lot of touches inside the 10 last year. So I don't think you have to worry about his touchdown total so much. I think, you know, 10, 12 touchdowns is a reasonable total for him at some point fairly soon. And he's really fun watch, and he's going to get a lot of touches. So Gio Bernard is the guy that you're most excited about there. Dalton is kind of in that, you know, third class of quarterback, where if you're platooning in a deep league, you can feel pretty good about it. And then obviously there's no question about A.J. Green at the top.
All right, A.J. Green's the other guy I have for his whole career. I do have him in that league, so it's
been nice. It's like so not right in some ways.
Listen,
you know,
I got shut. Look at the people I got shut out on for years and years and years. So
yeah,
and then also you get stuck with someone like I've had Bradford the whole time, so I have so irrational faith in Bradford. I'm like, no, here it comes.
And you've got to keep
it.
Yeah, he's always probably like your 11th keeper, 12th keeper.
You gotta hang on to Bradford because I drafted him first like years ago. Anyway, okay. NFC South. All right, we're gonna start with Tampa Bay. Now, to be fair, I'm only a third of the way through the preseason long read on Lovie Smith. So I don't know how much I can go with here, but is the real question here Martin? Is he the main both upside and potential explosion guy?
Yeah, I have got to imagine that Doug Martin is going to dominate touches there. I think he's by a fair amount the best option that they have, the best back that they have. We know his season got off to a horrible start last year before the injury, but his rookie season was so good. A lot of the production was in one game against the Raiders, but it was a really good season throughout, and they really rode him. This has been a situation where, like, the front office and the coaching staff have said a few different things about where the workload is going to go. Like, Lovie will say that they want a bell cow back, and somebody else will say that you've got to have a rotation in the NFL. But I think at the end of the day, Doug Martin is the guy in line for 260 to 300 touches, and that is the guy that I'd feel okay about Doug Martin in the second round, third round, somewhere in there. With the presence of guys like Andre Ellington, Gerhardt, Rashad Jennings, some people who come much later in drafts, would be reason for me not to draft Doug Martin in the second round, right? Like, you can take a shot with that receiver in round two. The receivers here are pretty interesting. We know Vincent Jackson is great. Mike Evans was a big part of the story for Johnny Manziel last year. They have, like, bookend receivers who are giants, who are like 6'5", 6'6". Big tight end. I mean, they got a lot of height on the field, and that worked really well for Josh McCown in Chicago last year. Now, these two receivers are not in any way like Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey. I mean,
they're just tall.
Vincent Jackson is a guy, who runs deep downfield and wins jump balls. Which maybe that's what it looked like Alshon Jeffrey was doing last year, but he's a full skill set receiver, and Brandon Marshall is obviously about as good as it gets in the NFL. And that's not where Mike Evans is. So it's not as simple as saying, hey, big guys, Josh McCown, he's going to have a good year. I don't think it's going to work quite that way. Maybe not going to be that simple. But McCown is a guy who has a shot at being on the board in like a 16-team league, but not somebody you need to mess around with in standard leagues. I'm kind of interested to see what this defense looks like, because one of the great things about Lovie Smith is that that Bears defense under him never finished outside the top five, usually outside the top, like, one or two in fantasy scoring, because Lovie Smith coaches his defenses not just to turn you over, but to score, right? Like, they run through a bunch of drills where the defenders are all expected to block downfield on returns of turnovers. I mean, they are pretty hardcore about it, and he coaches it differently than, they're almost agnostic to yards, and they're just trying to score on you when they're on defense. So that's always played really well for fantasy purposes, and so we'll see what we can get out of the Tampa defense. I bet it's going to be pretty good.
By going to Atlanta, I know that last year was finally the explosion, the implosion that they may have been building to for a while. But I don't know. I still kind of like Matt Ryan. I feel like he's still got the receivers. You?
Well, I love Matt Ryan. I mean, it's really hard. Like, if we're right about Roddy White, who I think a lot of us have as a top 15, top 16 receiver, and we're right about Julio Jones, who most of us have as a top 10 receiver, then right there's almost no way Matt Ryan is going to have a bad year.
All reverses. It's all reverses. That's all. That's how they're getting all their touchdowns.
It's our total horizontal offense. We're not looking downfield at all. We're just trying to run wide as often as we can and see where that goes. So he's 4,000 yards a year, almost every year at this point. And with those two receivers, should they stay healthy, and Julio looks fine right now, right? We're all watching him on Hard Knocks, and there doesn't appear to be any glaring problem with Julio Jones. Dynamic player, great player. I think was leading all receivers in fantasy scoring when he went down last year. I know he led the NFL in receptions when he went down last year. So, mega talent. So Ryan's obviously in a great situation. And the other thing that we like here is that the defense can't possibly be good. They didn't rush the passer well last year. I don't see that they've upgraded that situation at all. I don't see a pass rush here. And Weatherspoon is already hurt and down for the year. The defense just looks like it could be really, really messy, which is always good for the skill players on offense. Probably the big storyline here, fantasy-wise, is whether Steven Jackson has another 250 carry season in him. I think he may, but he was hurt right away in camp, which always a bad sign for a guy who is coming off, the story of his season last year was injuries as well. He was He's okay at the end, you know. He's still the guy at the goal line. So I think I like Steven Jackson for one more year of like a top 24, let's say, fantasy finish. I mean, I think he can be an RB2. I don't think he's a guy who's obviously he's not a guy who carries you anymore. And then Devontae Freeman, the kid playing behind him, really interesting long term.
All right, so the two main questions about New Orleans. One, of course, is the running back and all whatever's going on with that situation. Also, and this is a general talk and shop question for you. Do you add up the Saints, give them a little extra credit, all their players, just because in week 16 they play Atlanta, who may be one of the worst defenses, and that's generally when most leagues have their championships?
Yeah, you know, it's so hard in the NFL to play the strength of schedule game and to think that we know who's going to be great months in advance. I mean, you know, like the NFL just kicks your ass when you're trying to like
Right.
predict it week to week and when you're trying to rank players and teams. And I think if you asked any NFL beat writer who was expected to produce a power ranking on Tuesday or Wednesday, you know, or fantasy guys who have to rank the field every week, I mean, you just feel beaten up because it is so damn hard to predict. And to think that you can look ahead to December and decide, you know, no question New Orleans is going to be explosive, and no question Atlanta is going to be terrible, and they're not going to have anything on the line. And I hate to do that. I can't come up with a scenario in which Atlanta has a great defense, but you know, so
Yeah.
like that should work out, but I hate to make plans that way in the NFL. The other thing about New Orleans, I mean, the only safe investments here are Breeze and we assume Jimmy Graham. Like Jimmy Graham for me, tier of his own at the tight end position. A guy who can give you 1,200 yards and 13 touchdowns, that wouldn't be the least bit surprising to anyone. His targets are known, and they're there every week. And Drew Brees, obviously a guy who's kind of settled in at 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, which is
Settled.
a joke, right?
Right.
I mean, that's just what he is now. Like, that's your projection for Drew Brees. I mean, because he just does it again and again and again, which is ridiculous. But that's what he is, and they will use many receivers. There's a lot of buzz about the rookie Brandon Cooks, who, according to all the, you know, sunshiny camp reports, he's soaking everything up in camp and in practices, and you know, asks the right questions, gets it the first time he learns it. He's explosive. You know, he's all kinds of good things, but just remember that it's New Orleans, and it's usually a different guy each week, and he's not going to have exactly the Darren Sproles role. So I don't know that I'd just plug him in and say, okay, he's going to get 90 catches and this number of yards. I mean, but I do think for Cooks, in a dynasty league, I'd love him. I like his chances to get, say, 800 yards. Maybe it's 68 catches, something like that. I think it'd be a really good season for him. Stills is still around. Colston is still around. You know, it's kind of a spin the wheel offense. They're not, the Saints are a modern team that is not trying to be predictable, you know, snap to snap and play to play. So the backfield's going to be a mess. You're going to like Pierre Thomas in a PPR league and probably nowhere else. It's going to be a guessing game all year, except for Jimmy Graham and Drew Brees, who are like the best at their positions.
All right, we wrap up with the Carolina Panthers. It's always very strange to me how people constantly seem to be rooting for Cam Newton to fail. I really actually just don't understand it. But it does feel like he's lost a lot off of last year. Where do you like him fantasy-wise?
You know, like it's funny. I know all the receivers are gone, but they were terrible last
Right.
year. Like all of his bad. I mean, Steve Smith's not a bad like real world player. I don't want to make it sound like I'm totally dogging him, and he's still, you know, he'll be a contributor in multiple facets in Baltimore. It's just not. You know, the fantasy juice is gone, basically, right? It's not a high volume passing offense. He was kind of doomed from the start last year, but they're not any. But the point is, they're not replacing like some you know, murderer's row of receivers. So even though they're all gone, I don't know. Do I feel that much worse that they have a rookie in Kelvin Benjamin who could be special someday and has had a great preseason, great camp? Do I feel bad that they have the Cotchery, who was pretty good in Pittsburgh last year? No, I don't think. Like I don't think they've downgraded necessarily because they weren't any good last year. And Greg Olsen is still around. I think he's a nice value play at tight end because he has a really good shot to lead this team in receiving. You know, it could be like an 8,800, 8 kind of season for Greg Olsen. That wouldn't surprise me. And then we talked about it earlier. The great thing about Cam is he's the goal line back.
Right.
So you know, fantasy wise, you don't have to love him as a passer, but you need to think of Cam, like owning Cam Newton is basically like owning a combo QB2 and RB3, right? Like those are the stats you're getting. He's basically like the 25th best running back and the 17th best quarterback, and you get him in one guy. You know, it's awesome. I mean, his upside touchdown wise is in terms of rushing touchdowns is like the best in NFL history, right? He already owns that record. He's going to pass for 20. He's going to rush for 8, maybe 10. And he's going to end up with a top 4 fantasy season. I mean, the passing numbers aren't going to look great, but the rushing totals here and the number of touchdowns that he's going to score himself from within the 3. I wouldn't bet. That's not a guy I would bet against. I think his stats are relatively easy to predict.
And how about the running back situation?
It's the same mess it's always been, and Cam gets the touchdowns. yeah, I mean,
it's totally bizarre.
They're going to end up paying D'Angelo Williams over the course of his career like $500 million or something like that, and for, 8 touchdowns or whatever. I mean, still kind of a fun player, but not a guy who ever gets the ball inside the 10, certainly not inside the 5. A lot of questions about Jonathan Stewart because maybe there are no questions left anymore because he's going to get hurt. I mean, he's just not been a healthy player. When he plays, when this backfield comes down, like we have seen this in the past, when this backfield, Tolbert's there and Cam takes goal line scores and Williams and Stewart, when it does come down to one guy, like everybody else is hurt and it's just that one guy, then that one guy does always go off. But that so rarely happens. Not a backfield that you need to mess with, not a backfield that you need to look at and say, wow, there's a lot of upside there, because no matter what they do yardage wise, again, Cam gets all the touchdowns.
All right, moving over to the AFC, let's go east. All right, so for the record, if Donald Trump ends up buying the Bills, I don't think I'm going to talk about him anymore. Like, I just kind of feel like it's just I love the Bills. Like my wife's family, she's got family in Buffalo. I've been to a few games there. I love it. The fans are so loyal, and I know they don't want Bon Jovi to get the team because they moved to Toronto. But I feel like as a general rule, if Donald Trump is involved in something, you just shouldn't talk about it anymore. Like, it's just not.
I have some friends that are Bills fans, and I'm so on edge for them, and I have their uptight about it because their ownership situation could go so badly so quickly.
Are people actually thinking that maybe Trump is the better option is one of the most terrifying things I can possibly come up with.
It's like if you told me in 1988 that we would be talking about Bon Jovi owning a
or Donald Trump
franchise, unreal, totally unreal.
Boy. So, but how much does Sammy Watkins change everything with this team?
Sammy Watkins is fun, and Sammy Watkins is really good. Like we've come up with a lot of reasons why, fantasy guys always try to, put their unique spin on a lot of common questions. And you can make an argument for Mike Evans as the number one rookie receiver. You can certainly make an argument for Brandon Cooks, all these other guys. I mean, Sammy Watkins is the shit. That guy is good. That guy has, number one receiver, like, guy you're drafting in the second round for 6, 7, 8 years kind of talent. I mean, I think that guy is really good. It is a shame that he is with EJ Manuel right now, because EJ Manuel is not looking that great in the preseason. Did not look special last year. They don't go downfield a lot. This is a weird team. It's a really weird team because the Bills play at a crazy pace, right? Like, they run a million plays. They're up near the top of the league in terms of total plays run and fewest seconds to get off a play. But they ended up just leading the NFL in punts, right? They play really fast, and then they get to the punt. I mean, that's like, it's just a weird, it's the hurry up to punt offense. It's just a crazy team. And Manuel is just a big part of that for me. He doesn't go downfield particularly well. The secondary receivers are fine. Woods is fine. Williams could be fine, but you're not going to own them. You're not going to own more than one receiver tied to this offense, tied to EJ Manuel. And then the backfield is a bit of a mess as well. I think the world of Spiller's talent, and I think he's going to be Spiller, again, another one of those names where, like, maybe I can pass on Le'Veon Bell and Doug Martin and those guys in the second round because I can get Spiller in the fourth and the fifth. I can get guys of, like, his talent level is pretty rare and probably pretty similar to, like, Andre Ellington. I mean, if I don't even know if we would look at Spiller's season last year as such a disappointment if we hadn't taken him in the first round, right? Like, if you just look at it in terms of yardage, the yardage wasn't terrible. I think he gained like 4.6 yards per carry, so it's not like it was bad, you know. He made the mistake of getting drafted in the first round, so we all had huge expectations, and then he got hurt and played through it, which, you know, nobody ever looks good when they play through an injury and you know, aren't scoring touchdowns. So we've all rethought C.J. Spiller into a round where he does not belong on talent. I mean, I think he's a really great player tied to the offense that is probably going to run the ball as much as any in the NFL, and not a bad situation for a bounce back there. I like him.
All right, moving on to Miami. You know, I thought it had been assumed until like a couple of years ago that Noshart Marino was a bit of a bust. Like, you see, like, I thought that was the whole thing. And then last year, right, when he's on a team that has Peyton Manning throwing all that, all of a sudden he breaks through a little bit. It feels weird for Miami to be like touting him as like this big dude coming in.
Yeah, well, he was also the only, like, there was a while there. I mean, the NFL offseason, you can usually just tune it out entirely from a fantasy perspective, because like, there's like two solid months where everybody is in the shape of their life, and everybody is looking, you know, everybody's lost 20 pounds and it was good, or they've gained 20 pounds and that was a good thing, or like it's nothing but sunshine except for Noshawn Moreno this year. Like, he was the one guy who had nothing but bad player updates next to his name. It was notable that everybody else was going to have the season of their life, and then Noshawn Moreno was hurt and fat and fat and hurt. Like, it was just one, like, every other player blurb was either fat or hurt. So it's not looking good for Noshawn Moreno right now, and it does appear that Lamar is the guy that you want to own there. Pretty talented player, pretty fast. Needs help from the offensive line. You know, the offensive line can't get any worse than it was last year. It was bad on field, bad off field, all kinds of bad. So I would expect Lamar Miller to have a decent season and be one of those, you know, a guy who hovers around the 20 to 24 range in the weekly ranks, ends the season, if he stays healthy, with a pretty productive sort of 1,200 scrimmage yards-ish sort of season. I like him well enough. Tannehill really had some moments last year, had some notable comeback wins. You've got a little bit of receiving talent there with, you know, Hartline is boring but ends up being productive at the end of the year. Mike Wallace has all kinds of talent, and it just did not click last season. But he's almost free in drafts. I mean, he's not, you know, you don't have to pay a stiff price to get him. And you could certainly imagine a 1,000-yard season from Mike Wallace with 6-7 touchdowns. So there's some value plays here. And then Charles Clay was great last year as well. And another guy you can basically get for free because he does not go as a top 10 tight end. There's no buzz attached to him, but really, really productive player last season.
All right, moving on to the Jets. I know it's better for the Jets probably long-term to give Geno Smith the job, but isn't it better for fantasy players if they give it to Michael Vick?
Maybe, but if you give it to Michael Vick, how long does Michael Vick last? You know, is it 3 games? Is it 4 games? And then, you know, it's not like Vick has really wowed us over the last couple seasons either when he's been on the field. So it might be moderately better. I like the way that they handled this from the start and basically said it was Geno's, it was Geno's job. They haven't really played up the quarterback controversy idea to any great extent, at least early in camp. I mean, Geno's problem is that he was obviously terrible last year, right? He completed 55% of his passes, and you can talk all you want about it. I think there were a couple game-winning drives in there. Whatever. He was a bad watch. He was a really bad watch. He was inaccurate. And not only, you know, it wasn't the number of sacks that he took, but it was the distance on some of the sacks that he took was yeah, funny bad, right? Like it was clear that you're going down, and then he would like pivot, turn his back to the line of scrimmage, run back 10 yards, and take, you know, like an 18-yard sack or something where it could have just been two, you know. So there's a lot of that. I mean, kind of a comedy last season. So he can't possibly be that bad again. It helps to have Eric Decker. Right, Eric Decker was he a product of Peyton Manning and that offense to some extent? Of course he was. It was the most prolific passing offense in league history. But Eric Decker is a great red zone weapon. You know, 6'3", 6'4", he's been one of the most productive red zone receivers for a long period of time. He's going to see a lot of targets. They're not going to be great targets. You know, they're going to be Geno Smith style targets. So he's tied to a scattershot quarterback now instead of one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the business. But I could easily imagine 850, 950 yards on Eric Decker and 7 touchdowns, and that'll certainly play. So he's kind of the one guy of interest there. The backfield looks like a bit of a mess. You know, you have an obviously declining Chris Johnson. Might get a decent workload. They do run the heck out of the football. I mean, they were one of the very few teams last year that ran the ball more than they threw it. And, you know, it's not, they're, obviously the Jets are not on the level of like Seattle and the Niners and the other teams that do that. They did it to protect their quarterback. But that is a team that will commit to running the football. So there is a little bit of upside to Chris Johnson, and no one wants him, right? Like, he's the guy that all the smart guys are off Chris Johnson. So just on volume, he could have an okay year, I suppose.
All right, we finish up the East with the Patriots. Tom Brady, you know, I sit, and generally speaking, he's been pretty good at fantasy.
he's been pretty good. I've heard that.
I don't know, what do you think? He's like 46 now.
So much of this is tied to Rob Gronkowski, right? And I guess I might be the only Rob Gronkowski skeptic out there. I don't know. Like, the fantasy community is really on him. Like, loves his potential to for me, the idea that Rob Gronkowski can deliver like a classic Gronk season now, 8 months after destroying his knee, after 8 months after ACL surgery, I mean, there's just not a lot of that that goes down, right? Like, if you're drafting him thinking that his upside is 16 touchdowns and 1300 yards, something like that, I mean, to me, that's just a sucker's bet. I can't imagine it. There's one guy. I feel like I say this every time somebody asks me about Gronk, but there's like one guy. Adrian Peterson ruined the ACL injury, right? It's not like every story since Adrian Peterson, every ACL recovery has been like that. I mean, there's still, you know, Kenny Britt is out there still trying to work his way back from an ACL that happened 2 years ago. Mario Manningham is still trying to work his way back. Tim Hightower is out of the league. Rashad Mendenhall is out of the league. And Rashad Mendenhall hurt his ACL within a week of Adrian Peterson, never got right, and is now done. This happens all the time. RG3 was bad last year. I mean, it's just, you know, you go on and on and on. This injury is not as simple as 8 months later, you're fine, and you're an explosive athlete who can do everything again. So I personally don't think that Gronk's ceiling is much higher than 800, 900 yards. Maybe it's 8-9 scores, something like that. That would be a great, great year coming off that injury. And so that ties into Tom Brady's fantasy value. You know, the rest of these guys, pretty sketchy, pretty limited. Kenbrell Tompkins has had a little bit of buzz attached to him again this offseason, but you know, does he look like he's going to be a star to me? No. Dobson's still around, coming off a foot injury. Edelman is still there. Amendola is pre-injury right now, but will surely enter injury mode soon. You know, I mean, there's a bunch of guys who look like they should probably finish around 800 yards. So I don't know that there's any one receiver that I would jump on, but, you know, can Tom Brady still be a top 10 quarterback? Sure. Is he a top 3, top 4 quarterback this season? I can't see it. Not with where I expect Rob Gronkowski to end up.
I like to consider myself pre-injury. That's just like generally how I walk around the world. They look at me like, yeah, that guy's pre-injury. I can just see it.
Yeah, I mean, like if you could just turn off injury mode for Danny Amendola, that would be awesome for 1 year.
If I could turn off injury mode for me, oh, man. I've reached the age where, like, you know, it's that old Louis C.K. joke where, like, he sprains his ankle and he goes to the doctor, and the doctor's like, what are you going to do, doc? He's like, well, you have a shitty ankle now. Like, that's just what you do. Like, I can make it feel like a little bit better, but you have a shitty ankle. Like, that's just what you have. That's
yeah, I don't remember what the age was, but there is an age where, like, nothing ever feels good the next day. Like, yes. Whatever you do hurts for, like, 4 days.
Oh, yeah. And it's so funny. Like I have friends of mine that, like, are 15 years older than me, which was, you know, 10 years ago, they weren't really that old. But now, literally, all they talk about is what's wrong with them. Like, that's just it. That's all they talk about. So that's coming. Okay. Let's go to the
end. I eagerly await that podcast.
Yeah. Ooh, that'll be fun. All right.
Shit that's broken on me.
It's just gone. You just you have, your ankle sucks. You have a shitty ankle. All right, NFC North, the Minnesota Vikings. You have Teddy Bridgewater fever.
I kind of do have Teddy Bridgewater fever, and I like, this is another situation where I fine. So maybe Matt Castle starts the opener. I can't imagine Matt Castle finishes the season as the Vikings starting quarterback. I thought it was a great get for Minnesota to kind of leapfrog Houston in the draft. They got a guy who who am I? I'm not like, I'm not Mayock. I'm not, a guy who's breaking down, weeks and months. I'm not spending months breaking down college tape or anything like that. But I didn't see another quarterback who looked half as good as Teddy Bridgewater last year. And I can't believe he fell where he did. That guy was completing 70% of his throws. He barely threw an interception. I think it was 4 interceptions, something like that. Just a crazy good year, and he had a, he was at his best against big opponents too. I mean, Bridgewater is good. He's actually a guy where, like, the box score from his first preseason game didn't look very good at all. But if you're watching, like, if you watched week one of the preseason, all you saw were defensive holding and illegal contact penalties, right? Like, every good thing that happened in week one was negated by penalty. And Bridgewater's first throw, like, he rolled out and hit Greg Jennings along the sideline, pretty deep along the sideline. It was a great throw on the money, like, and that got erased by a penalty. But he had some really good moments. And so whatever, if Castle is out in the lead in that quarterback battle, fine. I got to believe Teddy Bridgewater wins out eventually, because Castle is going to be Castle at some point, and there's going to be an opening for Bridgewater. He's really good. I've got him in a couple dynasty leagues already. I just think the world of that guy. And it's a great situation, because Cordell Patterson is going to be a dynamite player. He's one of those guys where, for fantasy purposes, everybody was on him so early, and his talent is so obvious. His home run ability, his deep speed. He doesn't even run he's not even running routes like normal receiver routes. Almost everything he caught was right near the line of scrimmage, and then he just did bad things afterwards. I mean, he's a very talented player who, when he really develops in the position, is just going to be fantastic. And then obviously they have Earth's greatest running back in the backfield. Peterson's still crazy good, centerpiece of the offense. So there's a lot of fun fantasy pieces here, even though I don't think anybody expects him to win maybe more than 5-6 games, but it's still a fun team. So I look forward to the Teddy Bridgewater takeover. I think that guy's going to be great.
I actually feel like this whole division's like that. Like, I don't really think any of these teams are that great, but they're yeah. awesome fantasy teams. Like, they're just full of fantasy goodness. And that brings us to Detroit. Stafford being the ultimate, maybe not that great of a quarterback, but totally fun for fantasy football.
Oh, absolutely. And Detroit's always been the weird team that is sort of, at least under Schwartz for years, was sort of built around a wide receiver. I mean, it's just not that often that you see an offense where, like, everything is predicated around one receiver and how he's being, how he's being covered. But Calvin Johnson is obviously one of those guys who's, like, tier of his own at his position. Fantastic talent, obviously, could see 180 targets. If you told me Calvin Johnson's going to have a 2,000-yard season, I wouldn't, that wouldn't surprise me. 20 touchdowns wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's legitimately in that, like, Jerry Rice, Randy Moss ceiling sort of class. So that's still obviously there for him. I think Golden Tate was a beautiful pickup. So Golden Tate goes from an offense that was throwing 400 times a year to one that is surely going to throw 600 times. He's never going to see – I mean, how often can you double cover Golden Tate with Calvin Johnson on the field, right, and all those weapons on the field? So he's going to see a ton of single coverage. He has great hands, great route runner, clear path to a 1,000-yard season for Golden Tate. I think he's going to be really good. The backfield is a little messy with Joik Bell and Reggie Bush, but we think they're both going to see – they're both such good receivers that the workload can still be there for both of them, even if they – split carries. Probably in all likelihood one of them gets hurt. That's probably Reggie, and then Joik Bell takes over a full workload for a few weeks, and that's going to be awesome. He's probably the goal line guy most of the time anyway. So I think Joik Bell is a great deal in drafts, great bargain. It wouldn't shock me at all if he finished as an RB2 fantasy wise, and you don't have to draft him at that position. So a lot of talent there. And then Stafford's probably going to throw 17 interceptions, something like that, and he's going to have a bunch of head-scratching throws, but the volume will be there, and the talent on the field is so great, and his arm is so great, that it's going to be hard for him not to sort of accidentally throw for 4,600 yards and 30 scores, right? It's just such a good situation.
All right, so that brings us to the Bear Down Chicago Bears. You know, I did. By the way, you gotta stick around for trivia after this. We do trivia at the end of these podcasts. So when we're done,
Oh, Lord.
we're gonna stick around for trivia. And I did trivia a couple of weeks ago, and I asked who the Bears' all-time leading asked Mike Tannier who the Bears' all-time leading passer was, and he knew it was Jay Cutler. But that was amazing to me. Like, it feels like he. I know the Bears don't have
Yeah.
like great quarterback history, but I was pretty surprised that Jay Cutler was already the all-time leading passer in Chicago.
Well, you know, the other crazy thing that's happening is, like, I mean, how long is it going to be before Brandon Marshall's the all-time,
Right.
the franchise's all-time receiver? Alshon Jeffrey twice last year, I believe, set the single game receiving record for a franchise that's been around for like 300 years, right? I mean, that's nuts. No one can get hurt, first of all. I'm a Bears fan, and so I'm all over this team all the time. There's no depth here, right? Like, there's no depth behind Cutler. Right now it's like Jimmy Clausen behind Cutler. Nobody has shown a thing behind Matt Forte. There's no receiver on the roster who can deliver, you know, even a bad impression of Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall. It looked like they found a little something with Zach Miller behind Martellus Bennett, but now he's hurt, so there's nobody behind Bennett. Like, there's nobody backing anybody up at the skill spots, and somebody's going to get hurt, and the whole thing's going to go sideways. But right now, like, with everybody on paper healthy, I mean, it's a great offense. Matt Forte is like the number four pick in your fantasy draft. I think Jay Cutler is a very interesting fantasy commodity this year because it's kind of the situation we were talking about with Ryan, right? Where, like, if we're right about Brandon Marshall, and we always have been, I mean, he's an easy guy to predict, and we're right about Alshon Jeffrey being this good, there's pretty much no way Jay Cutler has a bad fantasy year, right? Like, that's you just add up whatever your projections are for Alshon's season, for Brandon Marshall's season, for Bennett, for Forte as a receiver, you're going to get to 4,200 yards just with those four guys, probably, right? Like, this is a ripe situation, and there's almost no way that Jay Cutler can mess this up short of getting injured. If you add his numbers and McCown's numbers from last year, you're going to get close to 4,500 yards and 32 touchdowns. You're going to get the number three fantasy quarterback. So I think that is legitimately his upside. I think Cutler has potential for a top three, top five fantasy season at his position, and you can get him like 12, 13 at the position. I mean, he's just a steal right now.
You know, a brief thing on the Bears because you're a fan. I did a thing. I did one of those Leach Across America things this year in Chicago, and then I interviewed Jeff Joniak. And
Oh, nice. Great guy, great broadcaster
totally
too.
great guy. And but it was so funny because like because you know, I want to be like, hey, it's pretty cool. You guys score like a ton of points. He kind of like snarled, like in a nice way. But he's like, yeah, that's not really the Bear. Like the Bears fans are like the Bears fans and organization seem to be a little embarrassed of having this like big offense and this terrible defense. Am I crazy? Like it just seems like so
Well,
against what they're supposed to be about.
it's not all of us, and I would not want to impugn Joniak, but I don't want to suggest that he's like a, you know, a meatball Bears fan. But there are people out there who would—they just want to win 9-7, right? Like, that's all they want. They just want Robbie Gould to kick three field goals, and they want a defense that holds you to 7 points. And that's just—I mean, that's how it was in like 77, 78, 84, 85. Fine, but that is not—I mean. Just look at what's getting called now. Look at the way the game is officiated. I mean, we're never going back there. That's not we're not going back to the hold the opponent to 6 points and, you know, win a game where only 15 total points are scored. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So, I am thrilled that the Trestman thing has worked out as it has. And he had, you know, I mean, there were some in-game management moments that even the in-game stuff that would happen to the Bears where you were scratching your head, Trestman always had, you know, you could still think it was wrong, but he always had a great explanation for the press. Like, and he always made you know, he always really made you think. Like, everything was backed up. He would show his work, and his work was pretty impressive, even when you disagreed with it. So I just thought he had a great first season. And these receivers are so talented that, you know, they can cover up a lot of mistakes. They can cover up imperfect throws. It's a good system and massively talented players right now.
All right, moving on to finish up the NFC North with Green Bay. I remember all those years where like you just Green Bay running backs, like you could get the starting running back and you would never start him because Green Bay running backs were just pointless to ever have. And now that running backs are kind of, I mean, they're obviously still important, but they're fading scoring wise. Now Green Bay, of course, has a top five running back.
I mean, Lacey, obviously a great college player, coming off a great rookie season, do it all every down sort of player. And there's not a lot of these guys that are in line for like a seriously large workload, like an every down sort of workload, who you feel pretty good about. I mean, it's really only, for me, it's only the top. I guess I might go eight. There's probably like eight guys out there where I feel like they have a legitimate shot at 300 touches, and I think they're worthy of it, right? Like, I think they're great, and I think Lacey is in that class. He'll generally go number four, number five in drafts. I'd probably take Calvin ahead of Eddie Lacey, but whatever. I mean, he should be in the first half of the first round of your draft in a standard league. So that's, you know, I mean, I hate this team is the other thing. I've, like, my whole life I've hated this team. So it's so painful even for 2 minutes to say like a bunch of nice things about the Packers. But Aaron Rodgers is as good as it gets in the NFL. Maybe he doesn't have the same, like, he's not the offensive coordinator in the same way that Peyton Manning is, right? So he's not quite there, but talk about a guy who like keeps plays alive, never turns the ball over. That's really frustrating. Generally stays healthy until last season, gives you a little rushing component to his game. Just can put the ball absolutely wherever he wants it. I mean, if you want to know what people mean when they say like throws a receiver open, I mean, Aaron Rodgers just does that all the time, and you get the feeling that he could he could have a 4,000-yard season with almost any group of receivers. And then they have year-to-year continuity with Randall Cobb, with Jordy Nelson. So you have this crew that's been working together a long time. The head coach is steady and has been there a long time, and it's just, it's a machine. It's a big, ugly, green machine, and they're going to be good.
So
The
begrudging.
tight
This
end
is
position
great
has been
to
a
me.
little bit. The
This
tight
is.
end position's been a little bit buzzy between like Bostic and Rodgers, so maybe they don't produce anyone. But it could, if one of them got hurt, that could be an interesting spot as well. I don't know. This team's going to score 32, 33 a game and drive me crazy, and probably, I don't know. I don't want to think negatively as a Bears fan just yet. So I still have my preseason Bears buzz. So I don't want to think about the Packers right now.
I'm going to have you on for a weekly Packers podcast. So fun. Like, I can even
I,
I can
like,
even
I don't,
handle.
I'm not like your superstitious sports fan who's like, oh, things are going badly, get out of the room, give me my lucky ball or whatever. I'm not that guy, but I won't let myself go to Bears Packers games anymore because they have never ended well when I have been present. Like, I was at the Halloween game where we got shellacked and there was a monsoon. I was at a game where, like, I don't know, somebody saw, I don't even remember who it was, caught a, maybe it was Brooks, who caught like a 99-yard touchdown. Like, every Packers game that I go to goes sideways. So I don't, that's the one concession that I make to sports superstitions, is I will not allow myself in a stadium where the Packers are playing because they will surely win.
I can actually talk more warmly about the Cubs than you can talk warmly about the Packers. That's really kind of amazing. All right, we're gonna move.
What have they ever done to you? What have the Cubs ever
The
done to
Cubs,
you?
hey, I
You
grew up
always
rough.
end up on the right end of that.
Well, I know I do, but that doesn't mean that will always be that way. So I must make sure. If you're just listen, one Cub. No, let's not get in the Cub thing, for crying out loud. I grew up in Central Illinois. I'm right on that Cubs Cardinals line. Those people were mean. Anyway,
Not
okay.
too late for you. You can still come over.
I'm sorry. It's going to take me like 15 minutes to recover to go on the rest of the podcast after that statement. All right, moving over to the AFC West. They're the Oakland Raiders. I kind of thought when Al Davis died, they would stop collecting guys over 30 that were coming in, but that doesn't appear to have happened.
Yeah, okay, so this is the team where we can for sure make up a lot of time. I mean, if you get through your fantasy draft and you have no Raiders, fine. That's probably a win right there. Schaub, super sketchy, obviously. He was a pick six machine last year. Carr could get interesting later on, but I don't think he's like, a mega upside guy. The receivers aren't great. James Jones was awesome in Green Bay and was a again, as a Bears fan, I'm happy to see him out of Green Bay. But I don't think he's going to have some special season in Oakland, not with these characters. The backfield looks like a mess right now, right, between Jones-Drew and McFadden. It's probably going to be a low-scoring team, so not a lot of touchdowns here, and a job share backfield between two vets who were recently bad. So,
Ooh,
there you go.
this
Don't
is exciting.
own them.
All right. Well, look, that we totally made up time on that one. So let's spend an hour on the Chargers. Philip Rivers is Philip Rivers is good again. It's nice.
Yeah, that was a hell of a turnaround season, and I thought that Philip Rivers, you know, just based on the tape from the year before, I thought he was kind of in that like final days of Mark Bulger phase, right, where he's really really skittish, just looking for the next sack, you know, head on a swivel, and was never going to be great again. And then, you know, radically changing the offense, putting a lot in his hands last season, and giving him, you know, it took him a while to sort of dig up Keenan Allen off the depth chart, but once he got in there, was fantastic. Great route runner, great player, a guy who looks like he can be a top 12-ish fantasy receiver for a long time. But they do spread the ball around too. It wasn't like it was just the Keenan Allen show, you know. Like, remember for a while there, we were like, wow, Eddie Royal scores a touchdown every week now. Eddie Royal's gonna be great. And then he went away. They still threw to Antonio. I mean, Antonio Gates finished with 70 some catches last year. Ladarius Green looks like he could be great behind him. So we have now the situation where Gates is like the mentor to a couple of really young, really talented players. A lot of talent in that receiving core. Hard at this point to imagine that Philip Rivers doesn't finish with like 4,400 yards and another 28, 30 touchdowns. So he's a guy, you know, if you can platoon him with Jay Cutler and just play matchups for a full season, or platoon him with Ben Roethlisberger, I bet you can get the equivalent there of, you know, a Drew Brees type season just by having two guys that you can get in the middle of the draft.
All right, moving on to Kansas City. Jamaal Charles seems to be a lot of people's number one. Is he yours?
He is my number one. You know, like, unappreciated thing about Jamaal Charles is I want to say that right now he is number two all time in yards per carry at the running back position. It's like Marion Motley and then him, and then much further down the list you'll find like Jim Brown and Adrian Peterson. I mean, it's a hell of a list, but Jamaal Charles is at or near the top of it. I mean, that is how good he's been over the course of his career. And then last year, Andy Reid, you know, there was that one little piece of fantasy value that had to be unlocked with Jamaal Charles, and that was finding a head coach who was just willing to put the best ball carrier on the field at the goal line. You know, like, so many
Weird.
guys get hung up on the idea that you need like a big, bruising, you know, plow into the line sort of back, but instead, they just inserted the most talented ball carrier in the NFL, and oh, what do you know? He had
Helps.
like 11 touchdowns from within the three. I mean, he was great. He's great at the goal line, and he has all that work now. I mean, that was what we saw with Westbrook in Philly. It's what we saw with Shady McCoy in Philly, and now Jamaal Charles has that role. I mean, he's an almost perfect fantasy weapon, right? He's 2,000 scrimmage yards, potential for 15 to 20 scores. So yeah, he's my number one.
And what else on this team?
And there's no one else on KC that
Okay,
I'm
good. That's what
particularly
I thought.
interested in.
Good to know. All right, so draft Kansas City Chiefs 1 and 426. Got it.
That's about right. That's about right. I'm not even going to pretend with Dwayne Bowe.
Good. But make us a lot happier. He's going to have a great year now, of course. And then we finished the AFC West and the AFC with the Denver Broncos. You know, the league that I run, I have two leagues that I play in regularly. One is that keeper league I've had for 20 years, and one is my regular redraft league every year. And another one of those things that I'm very stubborn and old school about is having quarterbacks' touchdowns be worth 6 points, just like running backs and wide receivers,
Sure.
because quarterback touchdowns don't actually count for less in the real world of football. I don't know. It just seems weird. Because really, what captures every single aspect more accurately of football than fantasy football, so why not hang on to that as much as possible? So, but it's funny. So the point is, the guy that had Peyton Manning last year won our league because you had Peyton Manning
Sure.
and he had 6 points. If you're in one of those leagues, should you pick Peyton Manning first?
So for me, it's not necessarily the 6 point passing touchdown league that does it. I mean, you know, obviously a lot of people who picked Peyton Manning last year won their league, whether it was 4 points per passing touchdown or six or whatever. I mean, he didn't turn the ball over either. That's like, if I could go on like a quick tangent about like a quarterback setting, I like huge penalties for interceptions. I don't mind the 6 point per passing touchdown thing at all. I like that, but I like, you know, give it like a -4 for interceptions, because if you want to roll in something where you really account for the difference between the league's bad quarterbacks and the league's good quarterbacks, so that like a pure volume guy who's actually not great but is throwing the ball 650 times, like, you know, you don't end up with Andy Dalton as the number three fantasy quarterback if you have huge deductions for interceptions. So I kind of like that. Yeah, but you do still get Peyton Manning at the top, obviously. It gives you a better separation. Anyway, so Manning obviously authors the greatest fantasy season in the history of his position last year. Is it remotely realistic to think that he throws 50 touchdowns again? I mean, that just doesn't happen. I want to say he's only had 40 in 2 seasons. So I mean, it's a bit, you can't draft him thinking, aha, I'm getting a guaranteed 50 touchdowns. I mean, that's a ridiculous total. And he ended up kind of chasing a record last year, and the def you know, like this year's defense looks like it could be really good. So as good as the offense is, the defense isn't going to force them necessarily to have to score 38 points a game. So I don't know that we'll see Manning chasing any records in the same way. The nice thing about Manning's season last year is that he just like never slowed down. Like even in the huge year that Tom Brady had in 07, the year that carried everybody into the fantasy playoffs, like he was a dog in week 15. I think it was like 140 yards, maybe one touchdown or no touchdowns. And he took you into the playoffs and he took you right out. But Manning didn't really slow down. I mean, he was great basically every game. Certainly good enough for you to win basically every game. So is it going to look like that this year? No, there's not going to be a 7 touchdown performance in there in all likelihood, but. Should he throw for 44, 45 touchdowns? Sure, that could happen. 4,800 yards, that could happen. Demaryius Thomas, there's an argument for him as the number two fantasy receiver. Probably the most interesting fantasy storyline here is what happens at running back, right? Because Marino overcame the fact that he's not even very good, to have a great fantasy season last year, because no running back in football is going to see more like 5-man and 6-man fronts than the Denver Broncos running back. We just hope that all that work falls to one guy. And Monte Ball having the appendectomy like right now, missing all this time, giving Anderson an opportunity, giving Hillman an opportunity, that's pretty bad for Monte. It's a shame. Monte's a guy who's not like. He's certainly not in that elite class of runner. He's a good college player, but not the most dynamic player you've ever seen. Had some issues last year in pass protection, had some issues certainly in ball security. So he's not a perfect player, but he could have fallen into a huge workload, and now he's not able to practice. He's not able to take reps. He's probably not able to take hits for a little while, right? I mean, he just had surgery, so. You got to figure that he comes into the year with kind of a partial share of the rushing workload, which is just a bummer because otherwise he would have been set up for potentially a huge season on a team that could score legitimately 30 points a game.
All right, and we wrap up with the NFC East and the Washington football team. When you look at, I think it's kind of hilarious already that I thought the whole point of this year was like, okay, now it's RG3's team. Now you don't got to worry about it. Now there'll be none of this stuff. And like after the first preseason game, Gruden is like, "Oh, listen, don't listen to me." He goes out on his own all the time. Like I thought we just went through this stuff. Is he going to be in the right position to succeed this year?
Well, he probably has the best group of receivers that he's worked with since Baylor, right? And that group was good, but I mean, DeSean Jackson is one of the game's elite vertical threats. Garcon is good. He's good last year on volume. I don't know that he's one of the NFL's best 15 receivers, but he's certainly going to get a high volume of targets as long as Jordan Reed stays healthy. He's a great sort, great at the seam route, great intermediate target. So they've got a lot of weapons there. And I do think it's reasonable to think that RG3 is going to get back to being the sort of accurate passer, much more competent player with another year removed from ACL surgery. I mean, I think that was really part of it last year. Confidence in himself physically was a thing. I don't think we're going to see as many designed runs for RG3, which was a big key to his fantasy value as a rookie. And he was right there as like the number one, number two fantasy quarterback for much of that rookie season. So I don't think we see as many designed runs, but he is such a good improv player, obviously we're going to see a lot of that. And is he going to be frustrating for his head coach at times? Sure, but that's his team. That's RG3's franchise. So I really can't imagine any kind of quarterback controversy brewing. I can't see a Kirk Cousins scenario really. I think RG3 is in a great situation, and he's probably going to rush for 500 yards, and he's got great weapons, and Gruden loves to throw the ball. I mean, Gruden helped make Andy Dalton a freaking top five fantasy quarterback last year, so he can do a lot with the talent level that RG3 has. So I'm pretty optimistic there. Alfred Morris, still pretty much the guy in the backfield, and not someone you can count on to catch passes, but certainly someone you can count on at the goal line. He's going to be a pretty good fantasy commodity. And another nice thing here is that the defense seems kind of middle of the pack. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they're going to shut people down and, you know, force RG3 to no longer throw the ball. Right. So it's a pretty ripe fantasy situation.
All right. Perhaps a less ripe fantasy situation are the New York Giants, or the AKA the team that's like, right, that guy, he's still coaching and he's still quarterbacking. Like it does feel like there have been so many, like, it's been so many times where each of them are like, okay, this is the last year they're going to deal with that from both of those guys. And then they win the Super Bowl that year and it just buys them.
Yeah.
Like,
that first Super Bowl win, nobody had ever looked as bad as Eli Manning looked in, like, there was like a November game up against Minnesota. I think he threw 4 interceptions. Like, he was such a punchline, and it was so unbelievable that they would even make the postseason from that point. But to win it, I mean, like, that's why you always hate to look ahead to Week 16 when we're in the preseason still, because, I mean, that's what the NFL does to you. Like, a guy who looked like the worst quarterback in football ended up winning the Super Bowl like within the same season. I mean,
and he looked totally pretty bad. He looked pretty bad last year. So are they going to win the Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, he's not had, you know, like what a thing to sort of float to the press that they wanted Eli Manning to complete 70% of his passes.
Of
I mean, that, like, if you included all the interceptions and you included all the shit that was caught by people on the sidelines, I mean, maybe you can find a pass to 68 or 70, whatever. It's really hard to imagine Eli Manning as a 70%. And if he were to become a 70% passer, it would mean that everything was thrown behind the line of scrimmage, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Totally not going to happen. Pretty ugly preseason, which you would expect with a new coordinator, a bit of a new offense. I mean, I wouldn't be too shocked about that. There are some reliable pieces here. Victor Cruz healthy, going to work out of the slot a lot, going to have a lot of after the catch opportunities. So that's the other thing. Like, you got Eli running, and not Earth's most accurate quarterback running an offense where they're going to rely on the receivers to get a lot of yards after the catch, and that takes like. It takes real precision. Like, you need to put the ball on the right shoulder. You need to, you know, you need to hit guys in stride. And so I don't know what this is all going to look like. But I do think Victor Cruz is in line for 90 catches, possibility of 100 catches here. Pretty good season. And that's a guy who has actually been a top 5 fantasy wide receiver before. And now you can get him at a price where he's like, you know, he's like 14 or 15 at the position. So I think he's a guy I'll probably snag in a lot of leagues because I think the upside is well ahead of his ADP right now. So he's a pretty interesting player. The backfield doesn't have great names, but I do think Rashad Jennings is going to get a ton of work. We expect Eli Manning to throw to the running back position a lot, and that is clearly Jennings' specialty and not the specialty of Andre Williams. So I think Jennings is going to be a really interesting play, a good PPR play, a guy who probably touches the football 280 times this year. So I think he'll be a nice value back, as like maybe get him in the 5th round, something like that. I think he's a nice play there. The rest of it, I do like Reuben Randall a lot. Still really young. What did a million things wrong last year? Like, Eli Manning threw 27 interceptions, and I would not, if you told me that 9 of them were Reuben Randall's fault, I guess I wouldn't be shocked by that. But still, you know, still finished with 600 yards, 6 touchdowns. Like, when he made plays, they were kind of wild plays. I mean, and he's had a pretty good camp in preseason. So if the light goes on there, you're talking about a guy who could end up with 1,000 receiving yards. I mean, he could be a legitimately interesting player as well.
All right, we move on to the team that I predict is going to start 0-4, and therefore we will have to list every single news report you read about the NFL or see that the NFL will be about this goddamn team for the first month of the season. So just be prepared for that. The Dallas, pretty much just the Oakland Raiders of 5 years ago, of the last 10 years. We just don't realize it yet. The Dallas Cowboys. It sounds right. Like, whenever you need that crazy old man owner that thinks he knows everything about, knows better than the football games, it doesn't. And
that's a good call.
But the guy that killed me last year was DeMarco Murray because he was hurt so much. If he's healthy, is he a top tier guy?
And then he closed really well last season. I mean, I think it's now reasonable to expect DeMarco Murray to miss, is it 3 or 4 games? You just hope they're the right 3 or 4 games. You hope it's at some point in the season where you can actually cover the absence, and you hope it's not the very end of the year. On talent and situation, I think he's a very fun player to watch. He's a bit of a roller coaster to own, but I think the talent is legit, and DeMarco is a guy that I have a hard time passing up when he falls to me in the second round. I am a believer in his talent. We've seen him have some like historically great days, so I don't think he's a total. The thing that annoys you most about DeMarco Murray is not even necessarily the injuries. It's actually the number of times that he'll get caught like 30 yards downfield when he'll break away and he's already gained 20 yards and there's no one else in the camera frame, and then it's super disappointing how often DeMarco Murray gets dragged down by somebody who just sort of enters the frame 35 yards downfield, whatever. So there's not like breakaway speed here or anything like that, but he is really fun to watch when he's healthy, and can he be a top 10 running back? Of course, I definitely think he can. Would I draft him in the first round? No, but again, if he falls late second round to me, he's a great play. This team has the one guy who I think is most capable in Dez Bryant. They have the one guy who I think is most capable of challenging Calvin Johnson for top scoring honors at receiver. Great physical talent. They're opening up route possibilities for Dez Bryant this year, it seems, or at least that's the hope. I've seen a little bit of that in the preseason. Can Romo throw the deep ball? I hope so. He's pretty clearly an injury risk coming off another surgery. I worry about him a little bit, but the price tag is so good. Again, this is a guy, the quarterback is so deep. You can get Romo in the Cutler Rivers range, and there's not a lot of risk attached there. If he falls to pick like 90, which is where I've seen him go, then Romo can be a pretty good play for you. Terrence Williams has some talent. Didn't like run a diverse route tree or anything like that last year, but made a lot of noise when he got the ball in his hands. And then the great thing about this team from a fantasy perspective is the defense is almost certainly going to be terrible. It is very difficult to imagine this defense being even middle of the road. So they're going to give up so many points, which means shootout potential for the offense, which means they never take their foot off the gas. So that at least should be fun. This should be like a really fun, maybe 5-win team, but for fantasy purposes, you love that.
And they get Andrew Luck in week 16. I know you're not supposed to look ahead, but that looks potentially kind of fun. All right, and we wrap up the whole deal with the, I would say other than Peyton Manning, probably the fantasy story of last year, and certainly I think arguably the biggest NFL story last year, that crazy offense and that crazy team of the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I think it's probably fair to say that Nick Foles will throw a few more interceptions this year because he's not a robot, but is he someone that we should still count on?
Can you count on him as like part of a fantasy platoon? You probably can. Nick Foles to me is not like a rock solid top 7, top 8 fantasy quarterback. I know the year was great last year, but like play to play, it wasn't always the best watch, right? Like he did have a bunch of balls that were kind of miraculously caught by either Deshaun Jackson, who's now gone, or there were a lot of great deep plays last year, a couple of Riley Cooper plays where you could not believe the defensive back could have been fielding a punt and caught it, and somehow Riley Cooper ends up with a deflection and scores a touchdown. He had some fluky fun plays last year. I'm not saying he's bad, but he was the beneficiary of a fair amount of luck last season. His most talented receiver is gone. I do like the rookie Matthews. We all like Jeremy Maclin if he can stay healthy, which is a big if. He's another guy who's a ways removed, much farther removed than like Gronk from the ACL surgery, but he is coming off an ACL and now he has hamstring problems. So, a bit of an injury risk with Maclin. Zach Ertz is a very interesting talent. Celek is still around. There's a bunch of weapons here. They run a bunch of fun formations and they play really fast. Like this offense is what the Bills mean to do, but the Bills just can't gain enough yards, right? They play really fast, and it all works, and they extend drives, and fun team. And it really, really helps when you have one of the most talented running backs who's ever played the game. I mean, I think Shady McCoy is obviously at this point, he's not just a system guy; he is just a great, great talent. Really, really fun to watch. If you want to take McCoy ahead of Charles at number one or ahead of Peterson, whatever, I get it. I wouldn't fight anybody who wanted to, McCoy could very easily score 5-6 more touchdowns than he had last year. A guy who's going to get all the carries he can handle. You don't have to worry about Darren Sproles there. That doesn't eat into what Shady McCoy does. You know, there's plenty of work to go around for three running backs, really. So McCoy, great situation. Should go first or second in your draft, basically. But Foles for me is a guy who falls in that 10 to 15 range, not the 5 to 10 range.
And do you like Sproles? Is Sproles worth keeping in the non-PPR league?
Sproles probably landed in the one place where he can come closest to replicating what he would have done in New Orleans. Another team that, you know, he happens to land in a spot that I was going to say that loves to throw the ball, but really Philly was a pretty even run-pass mix last year, but they are going to put the ball in the air. He's a great weapon for them, and again, they run a ton of plays. I have no problem with the idea of Darren Sproles as a 70-75 catch guy. He's not going to give you 1,000 yards, anything like that. I don't think he's going to run the ball a ton, but I think he's probably at maybe 90 to 95% of what he would have been in New Orleans. So, sure, I mean, you still love him in PPR leagues.
All right, so I can't have you on the podcast this long without closing up with one actual question about my actual team. I can't believe I went this long. Because we have to keep our 12 keepers. And then you have to hang on for trivia, so this is not even the last time we're talking. You have your 12 keepers, and I got to get rid of one wide receiver out of these six guys. Just tell me who to cut. Remember, this is future. This is forever. Okay.
These are like when you take a radio call and it's like a six player question. These are the hardest.
No, because all you got to do is get rid of one. You don't have to tell me like start three or four. Just tell me which one to cut. You don't have to say start which, like, you know, you don't have to rank them. Just and quickly, there's a couple guys that's going to be obvious are not the one that you cut. Okay, so here's the six. AJ Green, not the cut one, I assume.
not the cut.
Anquan Boldin, Michael Floyd, Cecil Shorts, DeAndre Hopkins, Justin Hunter.
So this to me pretty clearly Anquan Boldin. Could have an okay year, but the ceiling doesn't look anything like last year, right? Because Crabtree's back, Stevie Johnson's in the mix. They're not going to throw, right? I mean, Boldin is a guy who Colin Kaepernick really only had two games last year, like two like legit fantasy games, and one was the opener against Green Bay. It was like 400 yards, and then in Week 17, when nobody plays, he threw for 300 yards, and like those were the two big Anquan Boldin games. So even though he had a nice season, Boldin's season was basically two games, just like Kaepernick's. And I don't know, now he's like the number three option in an offense that doesn't throw, and you know, he's obviously getting up there in years, so he doesn't have any real dynasty appeal. So that's probably who I'd cut. Again, I like Shorts well enough. He's the other guy that comes to mind. I really like the potential for both Hunter and Hopkins, so I would hold on to those guys, and I'd probably let Boldin go.
Well, I realize that, you know, I've had Boldin his whole career. It's like the Panthers saying goodbye to Steve Smith.
those were good times.
We've been through so much. That
like,
rookie game.
Anquan Boldin's comeback from having his face shattered, like, and he's back 2 weeks later, is the single most impressive thing that I think I've ever seen from any player, like, since I've been covering sports in any capacity. Like, that was crazy. It was Kerry Rhodes that, like,
broke his face
in a million places, right? And he's just back, like, whatever, the next week, 2 weeks later.
That's right, because that was one insane of their many blowouts that year, because that was a game that Favre blew them out with the Jets, which is just kind of weird think about. All right, well, stick around for some trivia. I'll explain it to you so you don't get confused. But mostly, thanks for doing this, man. This has been really fun. This is a delight every year.
I always enjoy it.
It wasn't short, but that's okay. It's totally worth it. So thank you, Andy. I'll talk to you a second in trivia. But first off, thanks for doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so thanks to Andy Behrens. He's a fantasy football expert for Yahoo. You can follow him on Twitter at Andy Behrens, AndyBehrens. This has been the Will Leach Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We will be back tomorrow with part one of the two-part trivia extravaganza with Andy Behrens. All right, see you.